This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 5th of April, 2022. Pretty interesting market session yesterday in the U.S. It looks like this news that Elon Musk, CEO, of course, of Tesla, acquired a large stake in Twitter, making him Twitter's largest shareholder at above 9% of the company. And, a very enthusiastic market around this, especially in the whole cluster of speculative stocks and industries. You had Tesla up very strongly to above 1,100. And we had Twitter, of course, up massively. I don't have the percentage at the top of my head. But I think our take is safe to say we're trying to tone down the level of cynicism, but we can't tone it all down, that this is not necessarily a sign of a healthy market, maybe even a bit of a sign of the froth is getting a bit excessive here. The key resistance that should be noted also still in place. If you look at the NASDAQ 100, the slide is up on slide two, 100-day moving average, the blue line you can see there is still in place, the local little high there as well. The 200-day moving average, which you can't see because this is the June future, is right around the same level. And it's this key Fibonacci retracement level all around 15,270 or so. So this is just a really a key resistance area. And a news item like this, the way it hits the market is having our, the hair on the back of our neck a bit in the wrong place in terms of the reaction function. So what's your take here, Peter? I think you share a lot of the sense that this is getting a little bit out of control here.
Yeah, because I mean, a 20% rise in Twitter shares really tells you that the market is betting that the future looks a lot more brighter with Elon Musk as its main shareholder. But keep in mind, it's below 10%, right? He still needs to convince a little bit more than 40% of the other shareholders to make meaningful impact. To me, it just tells you that there is a cult around that Musk, and there is 100% faith in his transfer learning, that whatever he does in one company can easily be transferred to another. So just because he created a success at Tesla, he can create a success at Twitter. I don't think that's the case. He also has motives about expanding free speech and all that. To me, it's a sign of the markets. And I think actually an even more outrageous thing that happened yesterday outside Twitter was actually Cathie Wood's comments to Javier Blas
on Twitter,
by the way. So there was an upcoming Bloomberg TV interview, and Ed Ludlow from Bloomberg TV set out, if you could ask Wood one question, what would it be? And Javier Blas, being the chief commodity editor of Bloomberg on commodities, and also wrote the book World for Sale, which is a very deep insights into the physical commodity market. He said, still thinking oil prices go down to $12 a barrel, ? And Cathie Wood then replied, This supply and price shock is destroying demand and will accelerating the shift to electric transportation. So yes, and I think, on the one hand, I don't think she has a lot of knowledge about the physical commodity markets. On the other hand, I think a lot of people with deep insights in the physical commodity markets probably don't have a very good understanding of the pace of technology and what it can do. Probably the truth is somewhere in between. But in the meantime, at least for the next many years, I think a $12 per barrel on oil is just a fantasy dream. And I think it really speaks to these pockets in the market that are still, dreaming. I think there are some very harsh reality on the ground. And I think it's a nice segue into slide three. Otherwise, we'll be talking too much, or I will be talking too much. And that's we've brought this up a couple of times, the financial conditions. But I just really want to point out that we galloping towards that May interest rate hike, and we'll get a lot more hikes. The Fed is really going to be aggressive here. And we already have, before this interest rate tightening, we already have the financial conditions way above the average since 2013. And meanwhile, we have these new pockets of euphoria in the equity market. I'm still here to fade it. I'm still defensive.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, though, that you have those measures of financial conditions that you bring up, where I suspect the lean is heavily on the scale of tightening and eventual tightening that is priced into the Fed. You have mortgage rates, which are very key, of course, for the longer term, but how quickly do they bite? Also rising at a rapid pace. But if you look at credit spreads, if you look at volatility, it's all collapsing. And that is reflected as a mirror image of what you're seeing in the NASDAQ 100. So that's that key tension there, really interesting. But yes, we have to underline that the the galloping pace of tightening that is coming in from the Fed raising rates, but also especially the quantitative tightening on the order of trillions of dollars over the next 12 months plus, let's call it 2 years, is something the market is just doesn't understand how quickly that is, or the scale which that is going to tighten conditions for the market. And we have the commodity price tightening as well. Oh, this is tightening the potential for real growth. That is for sure. The latest out of Ukraine, very briefly, there's a discussion of a new round of sanctions because of these war crimes accusations in the areas where Russian forces have pulled out, and there are signs that the war crimes have taken place. And we have the U.S. also providing more lethal aid, so-called Switchblade drones that have supposed some kind of tank killer technology. And to me, this one's very interesting. The potential for it's just potential, but discussion that this could happen because there's been high-level talks between Ukraine and Chinese diplomats that Zelensky and Xi Jinping could have a call as well. Very interesting because China is needing to weigh in here on some level. Not weighing in is also weighing in here. So there has to be some sort of a sense of where China stands on all this. I think it's very critical for what happens going forward. Yeah.
Yeah, and we should mention in that regard that there are talks about that actually that there's there is more discussions allowed on the big social media channels in China around the episodes north of Kiev in Bukha. So that is maybe a tentative sign as well that China is changing its stance slowly in this is not good for Russia what is happening. So I think that's it's worth it. It worth a lot, I think, when they make these subtle changes in the debate inside China.
Yeah, and then you see how with all this latest noise, we're seeing the oil price picking up. Well, what's your take on all this? Where are you focusing your attention here?
Well, I just came across this chart on slide 4 because I've been noticing that we've seen a loss of momentum container rates recently. The market obviously talking about flattening yield curves, pointing towards an economic slowdown. And I think we are in real time potentially witnessing that starting to unfold already. On slide 4, I put in Maersk Containers, Maersk Shipping, obviously one of the biggest container shipping companies in the world and one of the composite container rates for global traffic. And most of the losses right now is happening on Asia to Europe routes, which is basically the epicenter right now. But generally, a slowdown in container rates and these shipping companies starting to give back some of the gains, even though they're obviously making tons of money right now. That could be another sign that we are starting in real time to see some of this slowdown coming. Regarding China, the lockdown continue in Shanghai. It's becoming not a crisis, but we're getting close to, because obviously many were not expecting these lockdowns to last more than a few days. And now potentially we're looking for a week or two. And with commodity prices at the same time galloping higher, China obviously got a vested interest from an economic perspective also to get this under control. And part of that process could potentially be just trying to support some kind of a peace process in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. But I also want to highlight again, we can't reiterate enough how potentially dangerous this is. We are seeing a new pickup in prices for wheat. Paris milling wheat and Chicago wheat both dropped to a one-month low as we've got through this past few weeks where a bit of consolidation, stock markets were higher, the things were just calming down a little bit, but nothing has changed really in terms of the availability of supply, and we're seeing wheat prices surge higher once again. The agricultural minister from Ukraine was out yesterday saying that 3.5 million hectares of farmland potentially could not be planted this year. At the same time, the shipping ports are closed because Russia has occupied them, and that leaves a significant bottlenecks and challenges for Ukraine base to ship their stocks abroad. And there's also risk, basically, the same minister saying that they could lose half of their harvest this year due to war. So we cannot reiterate enough how dangerous this potential is for obviously the poorer nations where they have a large percentage of their income going towards food and energy.
And on that note, would have to focus if Russian forces are refocusing their offensive efforts to the south. I guess Odessa is a key export city, and that would be a very key in that overall picture for food globally. All right, let's. What else are we focusing on in the FX market? We had a jump in the Australian dollar overnight. as we saw the RBA out with a pretty modest upgrade, really, to the hawkishness of its statement. Dropped this word patience, describing, you know, their stance on how long they're going to wait to start removing accommodation. You saw the short Australian rates heading back towards the cycle highs. There's still a, you know, there's a still a overall overriding doubt about whether they can get to the 2-3% range, which is their target, given the backdrop, because they're not sure that the inflation will be sustained sufficiently, and they're still focusing on wages as the key factor on whether they can get to that target range. So that'll mean we're just going to key off of wage data out of the Australia every quarter. But Aussie taking the ball and running with it overnight, and you can see on the chart I provided on slide 5, Aussie dollar vaulting above that key resistance level, the pivot high from late last year around 75.5, and into new territory, which really opens up the chart towards 80. If this continues, a very heavy commodity focus across FX on what is doing well. And interesting to see elsewhere, you see things like Peru, even though we're seeing protests in Peru about price hikes, the currency there doing very, very well. Very heavy focus in Peru on copper and gold. And in Brazil, similar, they're very impressive commodity portfolio. Within the G10, the Australian dollar is doing the best. So there's very much a commodity overlay. And then on the negative side, those countries with the most commodity dependency generally doing the worst. I would say the Swiss franc, a rather loud exception to that. But if you look at the Japanese yen and the euro, and overnight we did have Bank of Japan's Kuroda out saying something about the pace of moves, but it was when he was being questioned before Parliament. And they've also recently said that the weak yen does help the Japanese economy. Plus, U.S. long rates have been going rather sideways. So we really haven't tested the situation yet. The real test would come if we see new highs for the cycle for the longer yields, which would bring that 125 level in dollar yen back into view. Although I do think that there'll be increasing noise and efforts above 125 in dollar yen, if that's where we go, to push back against that move, despite the Bank of Japan's nominal yield curve control policy. Okay, let's. Where do we pick this up? Let's. Obviously, a slight focus on Twitter as a popular share to trade after this, after Elon Musk has waded in such a big way in that company's future. Where else are you focusing today, Peter, in terms of single stock stories?
Yeah, I think we talked about Sri Lanka yesterday on the podcast as as a country where the equity market is down 57% in dollar terms. The central bank chief left office. The government has handed in its, you know, resignation, or if the people want to. It's just a chaotic situation, shortages of medicine and food, riots, and now we have Peru issuing a curfew in the capital of Lima, because there are, you know, violent inflation protests. So it you know, you're seeing these cracks, they're widening in the developing countries. And it was very much sadness I say this. I think this is just the beginning, and it's basically an extension of what Ole just said about the, you know, we already had any big issues with fertilizer prices and the impact on food prices, but this whole, you know, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has just, you know, amplified this to a very terrible degree. FL Smith is an equipment maker for a mining company, so that is also in focus today. They have got a pretty sizable order for this company, I think. If I recall, I'm just around 3.5-4% of their revenue in this order for a copper and gold mine in Asia. So that's one worth having a look at as well. If you like this segment, and then I didn't put it in, but I think we should just quietly mention the big change that happened in the U.S. The Staten Island local unions have fought against Amazon fiercely, and Amazon have been able for years to hold off, and they have a huge lobby machine. They're doing everything they can with all different small tactics to avoid unionization of their workers. Keep in mind, a lot of the Amazon workers, they paid so little, especially to the upper management, that they really, you know, struggling sometimes, but they won on Staten Island, and this could be a big change for Amazon. And can you imagine if you have more unionization in the retail side in the US? It's a big chunk of the labor market, so that would just increase the input cost for retailers in general in the US.
Yeah, I don't know much specifically on that story, the Staten Island story. It's a borough of New York, for those not familiar with Staten Island. But there was also that somewhat related story in that there was that warehouse, I believe it was in Kentucky. There was a terrible tornado that hit the Amazon warehouse there. And there were a number of people working at that warehouse that were, of course, working for Amazon, but they were subcontractors And there was a bit of a scandal there because these subcontractors were not allowed to have their mobile phones, so they couldn't call for help or tell people what was going on or receive any notifications about the impending storm about to strike where they were working. Terrible situation. But I wonder, just to be devil's advocate here, if this would just step up Amazon's use and routing around the unionized worker problem to using subcontractors. Just a thought. I don't know what you say to that, but what else in terms of earnings watch? And we're gearing up. We need to have a bit of earnings perspective here. We had a bit of a discussion around that on the internal morning call, Peter, as we're looking at these Q1 earnings starting to roll in, I guess, really starting next week.
Yeah, so I will do a bigger thing on earnings when we get further into the week. For now, it's quiet. There's no earnings releases coming today, but tomorrow we are ramping up. And one of our key focuses is Christian Hansen. Christian Hansen, it's a Danish company. They do what you call specialty chemicals, so enzymes, catalyst, etc. And they're one of their competitors, Novozymes, just recently said, I think it was last week, that they are seeing unprecedented volatility and price rises across raw materials and inputs for their production. So an analyst miraculously think that Christian Hansen can actually lift their earnings, the bottom line, faster than the top line. I find that way too optimistic. So I think this is one of the early signs we could get to what extent inflation is really biting. And then you have Ed Yedani, which is a pretty followed market commentators on equities. He was out saying that he's getting pretty bullish on earnings per share growth in the US. And that's, I think, is a nice leading into the Q1 earnings season. I will say, as I've showed in one of my previous equity notes, recently equity notes on the 1970s inflation period, people have to remember, and I think we have had a discussion on a macro call as well, John, about this. So people have to remember that there's the nominal economy and then there's the real economy, and the nominal economy accelerates in an inflationary environment. So that's also why you saw earnings per share actually accelerating way above the long-term trend growth in earnings for U.S. companies during the 70s. But the equities in real were flat or slightly higher in nominal terms, but really down in real terms. And that's why the discussion we had last week on the podcast, what do you price equities in? So if you price equities in commodities, we're actually in a 15-month drawdown against commodities. It's also in a 12-month drawdown against inflation. So this is the story to track. It's the earnings growth will not stop or slow down in an inflationary environment. It's the pricing of that earnings growth that will change either through the PE multiple or whether it priced in inflation or commodities.
Yeah, so key on the nominal versus real argument as well, because if the Fed fails to get back some of its credibility, those real rates are going to, you're going to still see a yawning gap between the nominal growth of the economy, even if real growth is flat, and what you're getting for returns on so-called risk-free assets like treasuries. So they need to buy back some credibility. I doubt if we're going to have significantly positive real interest rates anytime soon, but less negative are definitely going to be needed to see that the change in this environment relative to what we've seen last let's call it six to 12 months. All right, let's look at where we're focus is on the macro calendar for today. The ISM March US ISM services survey is up. We saw a huge drop in that one back in February, all the way to 56.5. That's still nominally quite a positive number, but because we were posting some record numbers late last year and into the beginning of the year, very strong numbers above 60, some mean reversion was inevitable. The market looking for a bounce. I'm a bit curious to see what we actually get there, because this is a new month where we saw these new price rises. And of course, the psychology around inflation, is this starting to impact real activity as people are seeing real incomes dropping? So curious to see that one. We also have Fed Vice Chair Brainard. This is the most prominent Fed speaker we've had in a minute here. Up today, discussing on a virtual discussion on unequal impacts of inflation hosted by the Minneapolis Fed. There will be a Q&A. So interested to see if the Fed is trying to make some more pointed comments, if it's concerned that speculation is getting ahead of itself. A couple of the Fed speakers out as well. And then we have the FOMC minutes up tomorrow. We also have out today, this is the wrong time to be doing this, we should have highlighted at the top of the podcast, the Q2 outlook from the strategy team, the Saxo strategy team. We'll promote it a little bit more tomorrow. Seems like with everything going on, we wrote this thing ages ago, but it is hitting the streets today. So look for that on analysis.saxo. The Q2 outlook, all asset classes, all singing, all dancing. We call it the end game as we're looking at what is going on right now as a major inflection point away from decades of the sort of the serial bailout phenomenon, because we have the twin shocks that have created a new environment. Those twin shocks being the pandemic and then now a war in Ukraine and the effect and impact on commodity prices that is going to set a whole new macro environment in motion. So stay tuned for that. Look out for it. And we'll promote it a bit more tomorrow with on tomorrow's podcast. For now, stay careful out there. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.